pull that screen up tighter?
I don't. Okay, then today is July the 21st, 2011. This is an Instruction Personnel Policy Committee meeting, and it's 6:07 p.m. Tony, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Casares?
Here.
Mrs. Searles?
Here.
And the first agenda item, please.
Item 2A, review of TASB localized policies, update 90, and formulation of recommendation to the board. Ms. Carrasco.
Good evening, Madam Chair, committee members, Dr. Murphy. Update 90, we received update 90, which addresses various issues focusing on two key topics. One is technology, and the other is the new assessment testing, which is STAR. Basically, a lot of the revisions have to do with these two areas. I have provided for you the vantage points to the update 90, which is really a highly summarized overview of all the changes and the updates at a glance. I want to go ahead and just briefly go over, and I have provided you, and I believe Tony has also provided you, the comparison packet, which has the locals and how the language had changed. But I want to briefly go over these local policies. If you recall, any legal policy that is incorporated into this update does not have to be adopted by the board, but the local policies do have to be presented, and the board needs to adopt. So we want to recommend that. So we want to go ahead and discuss some of these. EI local and FMH local. These two policies really are now transitioning because of the STAR program. And basically, students entering grade 9 in the 11-12 school year must achieve certain scores on the end of course assessments in order to graduate, while students in grades 10 and above during the 11-12 school year must pass exit level tests to graduate. To accommodate both graduation requirements, the recommendation for EI local and FMH local is to replace references to exit level testing requirements with state testing requirements. So this is the verbiage that has changed on these policies. For districts with provisions on partial credit at EI local, the recommendation again is for revisions to clarify the text concerning a student who earns a passing grade in only one semester of a two-semester course. Policy CQ local and FNC local. These policies have broadened the scope to cover all district technology resources, including electronic equipment available to employees and students. CQ Local has added the requirement that filtering devices or software be installed on a district's network system in addition to filtering devices federally required for each district computer with internet access. And Ms. Brigham has informed me that this is something that is already in place here at Oakdale. A new provision is also recommended to ensure employees understand their obligations to retain electronic records in accordance with the district's records management program. Also, they have recommended adding language that allows employees and students limited personal use of the district's technology resources subject to the guidelines listed in the policy, as well as language regarding the use of by members of the public. BBI local, and that is a brand new local policy, and it's being recommended in response to requests from districts for guidance on board member use of district technology resources. As with employees and students, which is mentioned in CQ local, this policy allows board members limited personal use of district technology resources and requires board members to sign an agreement and be subject to monitoring by the superintendent or designee to ensure appropriate use. FNC e-local policy. Basically, on this one, throughout the text, there's recommended changes that clarify that this, as far as the electronic devices, they refer to personal telecommunication devices rather than district-owned devices. There are some new notes to distinguish existing provisions addressing personal use for new provisions on instructional use. Recommended text also clarifies that only authorized employees may confiscate a telecommunication device, and a reference to policy FNF has been added to point to provisions on searches of student-owned devices. CY Local is also a new policy, and for developing this policy, EFE has been deleted. EFE Local has been deleted, so that will no longer be used because some of that language has been incorporated into this new policy. And this new policy on intellectual property, copyright, and trademarks includes updates to the existing local provisions which were moved from CQ and EFE. Recommended provisions regarding intellectual property clarify that an employee owns work created on the employee's own time with personal equipment and materials, and provide that an employee must obtain permission to use district materials or equipment for an employee's own creative projects. It also addresses the district's ability to enter into a work-for-hire agreement with an independent contractor, and upon termination of a person's association with the district, all intellectual property belonging to the district must be returned to the district. Recommended provisions on copyright state that employees or students responsible for obtaining permission for using copyright material for instructional, curricular, or extracurricular purposes, unless the material falls under fair use exception. A license or permission must be obtained for using motion picture or other audiovisual materials in the classroom. Something new also on this is a provision that states that the district trademark, including district and campus names, logos, mascots, symbols, are protected from unauthorized use, although students and parent organizations, booster organizations, are permitted to use district trademarks to promote school-related activities. The policy gives the superintendent the authority to revoke permission if the use is improper or does not conform to the administrative regulations. Other entities or groups must obtain permission from the superintendent before using the district's trademark. BBD Local, which is one of the policies in reference to board member training, and basically on that policy, all that was added was a reference to another policy, to GBAA Legal. So basically, for that one, it was just adding a cross-reference regarding the public information coordinator. And in a nutshell, that basically are the local policies that are contained in Update 90.
Mrs. Searles, do you have any questions?
I do.
Yes.
Under CQ Local, it looks to me like we have just gone with the federal recommendation. We haven't done anything to go over and above the filtering devices that they provide.
Good evening.
Good evening, Annette.
No, what it states there is that we have to, actually we have gone above.
This is what I'd like to know.
Minimum we have to have, because under the state, we also have to, under the Child Protection Act and getting E-rate, we have to go above. So that's why we have the FortiGuide, and we have extra filtering for children that we do not have for professional, but yes, we do have to have extra.
And does it, when I read the policy, Annette,
yes, ma'am.
Under what we've read,
yes, sir.
What I'm reading is the last sentence, as defined by the Federal Children's Internet Protection Act. So we have over and above that.
Well, we have to have minimum of this, and they're very loosely have it defined. But if we couldn't even get, what we do is, if you ask any of the teachers or ask any of the kids, they think we filter it too much.
Okay.
So we do have to put parameters in. Before it used to be a blanket parameter, now we've lined up on the professionals and we've strengthened for the students.
Okay, so it is above what you're saying, what is
yes,
required.
Ma'am.
So we took the extra step.
Through the chair, can I make a comment about that? I want to let you know, the board know, that in my year and a half here, I have not had a single issue come to my office about the filtering in a negative way. Like Ms. Brigham says, the only thing that have come in is that they think it's too strict. But we've not had one incident that's gotten to me, at least, where, you know, there's been inappropriate kids looking at things. So, and then the other thing is, we did loosen up on the professionals. We had, for instance, we were heavy on Facebook, but we had Facebook blocked. So we are allowing now the teachers and the administrators' computers to have that access, and we're able to pinpoint which computers and those types of things. And we've had, with that even occurred all year last year, and again, not a single major issue that came forward.
Okay. And the other question I have is on BBD Local. When I am looking in our board book, it's page 1 of 1, and I'm not real sure why it's in there. It doesn't look like we've changed anything. It says CGGBA.
And that was the only addition, that reference. It's a cross-reference to that policy that CASB has added. In other words,
okay.
There's links between policies.
I understand.
And so
nothing changed.
Nothing
just
changed.
Links.
It was just a cross-reference added.
Okay. That's it. Thank you very much.
Ms. Cáceres?
No questions.
Ms. Quintana? Mr. Corona?
Just one question. I guess, Pam, do you know on the academic achievement, whether, when to anticipate for the, and I'm talking about EI Local, when they anticipate that the scoring for the STAR is going to come in?
They're anticipating late fall of 2012. So they're going to take the exam in May 2012. So for example, if you have, it's actually 3 through 8. 3 through 8,
uh-huh.
If you have an 8th grader that is taking the STAR in May, he won't know until he's about midway through freshman year. We won't know either.
All right.
How, if they passed or not.
And for those people that are seniors this coming year?
If they're seniors and they've already passed TAPS, they're fine. If they have to take, then they continue to take the exit. It's
not the STAR.
Right. It's our current 8th graders that will be freshmen this year that are pushing TAPS out.
All right.
So it's this cohort.
STAR the route.
Mm-hmm. And any current freshman and above will graduate under the TAPS requirements.
Freshman.
What do you mean by current freshman?
Okay, current sophomores,
yes.
Or repeating freshmen.
In other words,
anybody in the...
this August, those that are sophomores will...
Yes, or repeating freshmen. The current 8th graders of 2011, that cohort will push out TAPS. They will be the first ones to take STAR. And anybody in high school right now will have TAPS.
Period, right.
Whether they're a sophomore or even if they remain a freshman. If they remain a freshman, if they didn't get their credits and remain a freshman, they will not be tested next year at all.
So it'll be from 2015?
Yes.
The last senior class, right?
Well,
yes.
But I think...
2015.
The incoming freshmen, first-year freshmen, will be EOC.
Yes.
They're not taxed.
Right.
It is the second-year students, either their sophomores or their retreads, that are still taxed.
Yes. However, if we have freshmen this year that will be repeating freshmen,
right.
They will not take tax or STAR. They will not be tested this year.
Repeat freshmen will not be tested at all.
Wow. Because there's no tax for them anymore.
Interesting.
And they're not part of the EOC cohort.
Interesting.
So they don't have to do anything?
Right. So what I anticipate on doing is giving them a released 10th grade test because they will have to. We're going to make them test anyway locally. Yeah. But the state is not going to require any testing.
And through the chair, this is just another example of this weird year. You'll read in my notes that I wrote in your packet. We don't even know how to set goals this year for the scores themselves, because the scores won't be reported for another year and a half. Even after they take the exam, it'll be another 6 months after that before we get scores. And I've been talking to other superintendents around the region. It's very, very difficult right now to figure out what even the expectation is. Like for instance, now I didn't even know this, now the retread freshmen, which we probably have about 100 kids that fall in that every year, don't even have an exam to take.
Yeah, one doesn't exist because there's no more ninth grade tax and they're not part of the EOC cohort.
Okay.
And then we did find out also that our eighth graders that are taking Algebra 1 next year will only have to take the EOC test. They won't have to take the eighth grade test. They won't have to take two, so that's good news.
All right, and the thing that worries me is we're going through this. How do we, in terms of our, if we do it, we're going to do any benchmarks throughout this coming year, how do we prepare for what we think the targets are?
Well, we do have a blueprint, and Pam, I think, is even going to talk about that in her presentation.
Yes,
but we just don't know what the scoring rubric is going to look like on it.
But we could do our own.
And we will want to share
projected deal. So we could say, okay, percentage-wise, if we take a look at what was the previous, on the first, say, year that the tax got implemented, when they came down on their psychometricians, whatever they, what did they fall in terms of percentage-wise? And maybe just so that we can start trying to see where, because it's going to be hard for us to gauge it if they don't tell us.
Right.
So how are we going to prepare for the following if we don't know where we're at?
And some data that we do have right now is Algebra 1 EOC has been live for several years, many years. And what we have right now let's take into consideration most of the students that have been taking this Algebra 1 EOC have been your 8th grade students. Not too many high school students have been taking it. The state passing rate last year was 54% of the Algebra 1 EOC. That's kind of gives us an idea of.
And those are the top kids.
Most of them.
Really?
It's eighth graders who take algebra.
Algebra.
So that's the top.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a 54% pass.
54%.
But we also have to take into consideration those eighth graders were also accountable for eighth grade tax. And if any ninth graders that took it, they had also prepared for a tax test that was half eighth grade stuff too. So there's the classroom, the Algebra 1 classroom has really never been able, since tax, been able to be completely devoted to Algebra 1. Mm-hmm. Because the test at the end of the year, half of it was eighth grade material. So we had to review that.
So it wasn't really a true Algebra 1.
Right.
Okay.
So hopefully, you know.
So.
But I'll share with you in a little while some things that we're doing to try to prepare for that. And I'm really seeing it as a year to ground ourselves in the STAR and EOC. And you'll see what the curriculum writers have done. And I think they've done some really good work.
Okay. That's all I have.
Ms. Pam.
Yes.
I have another question.
Sure.
On the. And EI local, on the vantage points, it also say that EIA legal, page 2, It says at EIA Legal, new provisions call for a district to adopt local policy requiring a student's performance on an EOC assessment to count for 15% of the student's final grade for the course. I don't see it addressed in our local policy.
I was waiting for this to come out with TASB so that we could write the local policy for that one.
I know, but we're already working on the local policy today, so do we need to?
Well, we've been doing some groundwork with it, really considering taking the first the credit averaging to be 85% of the grade, mm-hmm. and then 15% to be the test. So at the next board meeting, we should have something.
Next policy?
No, I think very soon in August in the board meeting.
Well, we probably need to take the policy first, so probably the next time this committee meets would be the start of that.
Okay, no further questions. So does my committee agree with the recommendation? Ms. Casares?
I just want to ask one question. Regarding that he was talking about on page 2, mm-hmm. I noticed that it says a district is not required to use the student's retake score in the final course grade calculation. Did that just recently change? Because the meeting we went to, they said, they instructed us that the students were going to be allowed to take it as many times mm-hmm. as they wanted to.
Did that change? No, they can still take it as many times as they want to, but it's still up to the LEA to determine if the teachers will be required to go back and change their grade.
Oh, okay.
After repeated takes. And talking to Jim Fry, what we're kind of throwing around is if it will help them pass, yes, but just, to increase GPA.
So is it going to be on an individual basis? Is it up to us to put it in
policy? It's up to us to put it in policy how we want.
And I clearly define those guidelines. Okay, that's what I want to show. Thank you.
Any further questions? Yes, sir.
Martha, you were talking about searches of electronic devices. So, like an assistant principal wants to look at a kid's text messages. Well, can you go back over that? What policy was that?
C1? CQ?
Monitor use?
FNCE Local.
FNC Local. Do you have a page number?
Page five
or two of, I mean one of two, FNC Local?
FNC Local, yes. Where it says that we were going to have to only identify authorized employees that can confiscate these telecommunications.
Where is that? Under what section?
It is, I'm looking at the
vantage
points. You have a copy of the
vantage points? I have the policy. Okay, go ahead.
I have it. It's page 2?
Page 5.
Page 5, all right. FNCE Local Policy Considerations. Okay, go ahead.
And it's that last paragraph. It says that we've got to clarify that only authorized employees may confiscate a telecommunication device, and a reference in policy FNF has been added to point to provisions on searches for student-owned devices.
I have a question.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. What's authorized employees?
Mm-hmm. Pardon me?
That's very generic.
Yes, it is. And so in adopting these policies, and maybe in the
since this came back as a consideration, policy consideration, what we will do, Ms. Gonzalez, is we'll go back and make sure that it is, that we might have to do local and define authorized personnel. Right now, I believe it is a teacher, but it's assistant principal and principal. So we have to align it to a student handbook, student code of conduct, and our employee handbook. Which I just got the employee handbook when I was in Dallas, so I can check that. But what I do think is, like what we're saying, that this is, we just have to make sure that we have defined authorized, and if we have not, we have to come out and create a local policy on that to define authorized.
Basically, what TASB does is give us the groundwork for the policies coming up. These that are in local, these is that the district has the discretion to expand on them. So basically, once we adopt these, we can go in there and make further changes on this policy and then bring them back to the board with the recommended changes that administration has proposed.
I have another question, Ms. Gonzalez.
Yes, sir.
In the second paragraph of FMCE local, it says a confiscated personal telecommunications device shall be released for a fee determined by the board. So obviously that's something the board needs to do, and we need to recommend what the fee is going to be, I guess.
We have that already.
Okay.
And it is a $15 fee for students to pick up their cell phones to have them released back to them.
Okay.
I've paid that fee several times.
I thought EPA is 25,
but
yes, 15.
I can't believe
it.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Carrasco or Ms. Brigham, can you just elaborate? Is this saying that we need, that we're saying we can actually go through the student's phone if the telecommunication device is removed from the student? If it's confiscated, you can actually go through it? Is that what that's saying?
It's kind of cryptic. It says there's a reference in FNF to that.
What Mark and I had discussed this earlier, if that telecommunication device used our network, our school network, if it went over, because you know if you have an iPhone, if you have a Droid, if you have anything, you could still get emails. Mm-hmm. And if the student used their student ID to send it over our email, yes, you can.
Okay, so they would actually have to be using the Wi-Fi then, or you're saying logged into their student email. Okay, I got you.
Because what the AUP is, uh-huh, is that, because if you look at the AUP and you look at what they're asking here, it's also making sure we don't do the bullying, the harassment, and all things. So if they go over our network,
How do we find out if they did?
That part's easy. I'm saying like for text messages or that type. No, right?
No, ma'am.
No, wait. No, I don't think that's what that says. I think the last sentence says alluding to FNF regarding searches of telecommunications materials. I don't think it says that we can't. Now, the local policy might be that we want to do it, but I think it's wide enough to allow it if we need it. Am I wrong? Read the last sentence.
It's on page 5 of the vantage points. Ms. Quintana, you had to...
Yes, I have a question. They can also Bluetooth messages onto other computers or other devices in the classroom.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And it could be a form of bullying.
Absolutely.
Something really derogatory.
Once it hits our network. But I'm absolutely... you know, like even like with Pam said, what Martha just said, that once we have this framework from TASB, so we're always going to be looking at authorized employees. But how I understood it, and if we've already heard a couple of people that read it differently, what I'm understanding, if it goes through the network,
right,
that makes more sense to me. The other way, it's like, okay, big brother, hello. I think that's too much.
If there's like we dealt with a situation right at the end of the school year where there was a gang fight at the high school. I use that term loosely. There was like 5 or 6 boys involved in a gang fight. And it was clearly, and some of the boys were saying that they were innocent. Okay? And it was clear that they were texting each other prior to that. The boys that were saying they're innocent absolutely were not innocent. They were very much involved on the text about how horrible the other person was and how much they wanted to beat him up. But then when they got to the principal's office, they said they didn't do anything. And that was something that happened just in the last couple of weeks of school. And what I'm saying is that although we might still not want to go into their text messaging and see that, I think it is allowable by law for a district to set a policy that said we could do it. Not saying that we would, but I think we could, because, you know, she's talking about network, but if you read that last paragraph at the top of page 5, it doesn't say anything about network. It says provisions on searches of student-owned devices. So, Martha, what we need to do is we need to expand and find out exactly what that means by law, that then we set a policy. And you know, if the big brother concern is there, we could say no, but we've got to clarify that better. And I would be against a teacher certainly being able to do that. If the board decided it was okay, it would only be administrators at the very least, and maybe just the principal.
And it could also even be even set up.
And okay, what happens if the student has their phone password protected and they tell you, I'm not giving it to you? I mean, you can't get into the phone. So what would happen in that case?
We would have to set a policy and...
Yeah, you call the parent too, you know, maybe okay. You
suspend them.
I mean, I'm just saying it's realistic. It is
it
out
happens.
There.
It happens.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions?
Let's look into that deeper and bring that back.
I have now, I don't know if I want to, which policies do you want to recommend now? Because now I don't know if I want to recommend now. Policy A6. I mean, are we going to go back and fine-tune it, or?
You can recommend it, Ms. Gonzalez, as part of the package, as the whole update 90. But as they're getting more clarification and things are coming, I mean, that's going to be, like, given everything that's going on with the state and the testing, I mean, we're going to have to update and look at that policy several times. So there might be some changes.
It's going to be ongoing.
Yeah.
It's going to be an ongoing thing.
So we can... Do you agree, Mr. President? Okay, then we can recommend it to the board for approval. Ms. Tony, the next agenda item.
Item 2B, review and discussion of college readiness coordinator position discussed.
I have provided you in the package also the campus testing and college readiness facilitator job description that was newly created. This is a new position to the district. It is a much needed position and very much advocated by Mr. Jim Fry. And basically what this is this person is going to be responsible for coordinating and supervising and the implementation of the statewide local district group testing programs at the high school. They will be responsible for supervision, college readiness center, and related campus activities. There's been a great deal of discussion over this position. It will be assisting and working closely with the counselors and doing the testing. I believe Mr. Fry made some recommendations and comments. Pam, I think, did he bring you those? So we're bringing it forth for your review and consideration and for you to approve that this position is already posted. So we're bringing it forth to see if you have any questions or comments in regards to this.
Thank you.
Ms. Cuthbert.
Ms. Fierro, Ms. Carrasco, this position, I noticed that in the job description, it doesn't state any, it's going to have no supervisory responsibilities, but in terms of paperwork and clerical, is the idea or the theory that the current clerk in the counseling office will also assist with this person clerical-wise, or are they going to be responsible, independent, all on their own?
I believe that's something that Mr. Fry will designate. As we've mentioned before, he's got a data entry, and he does have a clerk, in the counselor's office, so there is assistance there that can be provided if needed.
Okay. Is also the feeling when this person comes on board that the counselor's in place now, they will have nothing to do with college readiness at all, or they'll still assist in some way?
Oh yeah, they'll still very much assist and do the counseling piece. And that's what it really is, trying to free up the counselor to be able to do that part, or this person can spend the time in the GO Center really helping them apply for college, talk to parents, help with the AccuPlacer, PSAT, SAT, and help deal with those tasks that require lots of time, so that free up the counselor so that they can do the counseling and really help with the schedules, making sure they're on track for graduation, they're staying on cohort, they're passing their classes. Also, counseling, group counseling for certain issues that, you know, students may come with, and really have an opportunity for those counselors to use their strengths to counsel, which is what they really are trained to do.
I'm asking because, for example, if a student comes to this person, would they go to this person or their counselor if they're having issues regarding their schedule and what's going to help them on their career pathway? Are they going to come to this person or are they going to go to their counselor, or either or?
I think, you know, depending on what their problem is, the GO Center is going to really help talk to them or help them go through the process of the computer programs that help them decide what career do I really want, what is best for me. But if it comes to classes to take and what's going to help me through, that's going to be the counselor.
Okay. Is the high school right now a testing center for ACT and SAT? And if so, how many go-arounds do they take it here?
You know what? Go ahead.
Through the chair. Yes, it is, and I think it's offered at least three times at our high school.
Both each exam or three times?
I know the SAT. I don't know the ACT.
Okay.
We can find that out.
And this individual would be responsible for coordinating that, getting it ready. Okay.
Making sure kids sign up, encouraging them so we can maintain those goals.
Okay.
That was going to be my question, to maintain the goal that had been set, met.
You'll see it's in the packet. We have it again for next year.
Okay, good.
And also, as we go, we're going to have two tests this year, TAS and STAR, and we're going to, again, there's going to come a point where a student can take EOC as many times as they want to during the testing seasons, and it's really also going to help free up the assistant principal, who is very involved in testing, to do the discipline and the instructional monitoring that really needs to happen with the assistant principal.
Oh, one more question. The GO Center that we currently have, how many computers are available to students in there?
I can get that to you.
There's about eight.
Eight? Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Ms. Quintana? Mr. Coronel? No? I just going to make a comment. At that time that they requested that this actually that I requested that this item put on the agenda, I just did it as a formality that as per the regulation that is currently in place. And I know that at that time that we discussed it as during the budget session that we had. When did we have that?
Hold on. Late June.
It says here July. Anyway, I don't have a date. I know that it went through the budget discussion, and I just went through the regulation, and it does say here that the Board of Trustees will approve new positions as part of the annual budget review and based on staffing guidelines developed by the Human Resources Division. And further on it says approval, blah, 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 and submission to the Board of Trustees for final approval. So I'm glad we're seeing this as a formality, and to see the final paperwork come before us, and if we have further questions, we have the opportunity to ask it here. So thank you.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
One point about that.
Absolutely, but please note that this position is not being funded. It's being funded out of the high school allotment. And so it was not something that was approved as far as the budget. Jim is reconfiguring some of his own money that he gets every year for high school allotment to pay for this position.
But it's a newly created position.
Yeah, it is a newly created position.
That's why it comes before the board.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So let me see what's the... any more questions? Okay, so the next agenda item, Tony?
Item 2C, summer curriculum writing review, Ms. Keanu.
Your department?
Yes.
Yeah, that's next agenda.
Oh, yeah, it's dark. Let me. Should we turn on one light? If we're close, I think. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Is that better? It was harder to see even with white, so. Oh, yeah, that's going to be the next agenda item. I should have put that last.
Okay.
I forgot that it was second. But. So you might want to go to the second page where it starts the PowerPoint. Did you get one, Ben? There should be a few extras. Dr. Murphy.
You too?
Actually, I'm very excited to be sharing this with you all because I'm so proud of the curriculum writers that we had in the summer. They did a phenomenal job. They worked so hard. And they were on task, focused. So I'm excited to be able to share this with you. All on the PowerPoint, or do you?
Is it dark?
I think it might be for them to see the PowerPoint. Well, if you're close here, we'll see how it goes. If you all need light, let me know. Okay, so coming together and looking at the district goals, came up with the acronym PANATIO is going places. P standing for professional development, L for learning communities, A for analysis of data, C for curriculum, E for engagement, student engagement, and S for student populations. I figured as we visit the campuses, places is a good way to remember what are those things that we're focusing on. Everything that we spend our budget on will revolve around those things. So the goals for 2011-2012 for the curriculum instruction department, and I'm just kind of giving you a foundation of why we did the work we did this summer, and I won't spend too much time on it. But we really need to monitor. We want to make better the professional learning communities. Okay, so monitoring by walkthroughs during those professional learning community times to see, you know, to make sure that the teachers are doing one of these things, analyzing data or analyzing student work or studying the curriculum or studying KILGO, planning a lesson or sharing best practices. Those should be the things that they should focus on during their PLCs. That's what we should be seeing. Monitoring implementation of curriculum, okay? So using trailing indicators. We only want to use TACs at the beginning of the year because after that, it's old data. So that's considered a trailing indicator.
How they did last year.
Yes, because it's over. But we still have TACs. So this year, what we did at curriculum writing is we analyzed the TACs data for objectives that will continue with STAR. For example, the readiness and supporting standards through Eduphoria. The state now has the assessed curriculum
All the standards are either readiness or supporting. Readiness standards is 30% of the curriculum, but it's 65% of the test. And the rest are supporting. So supporting standards are 65% or 70% of the curriculum, but only 35% of the test. So they want fewer, deeper, clear. They want us to go deeper, teach concepts more, and teach it to a higher rigor. And those are going to be tested every year and more often than the supporting are going to go in and out of the test. But they're still important. So that at least they're giving us our power standards. Leading indicators, so what are we going to use from after we've analyzed the tax data and we've made an instructional decision based on that? Well, we're going to use common assessments. Okay, curriculum writers created common assessments. And we're analyzing the readiness and supporting standards as we're giving the common assessments. We have Eduphoria that will tell us, for this certain student expectation, it's a readiness standard, how did my class do on this exam? And so we can monitor that and decide, do we need to reteach it or can we move on? Or do we need to pull some kids aside for intervention? We're going to create and administer mock tests aligned to STAR and analyze the readiness and supporting standards. You know, in discussion with the curriculum writers, we don't really want to use released exams anymore. And not that we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think with $2,000 an item that the state pays to create one item, I don't think they're going to throw everything out that they have not released. So looking at those more rigorous items, we can still study those and help those inform our instruction.
And we did that last year as well. We did the mock exams.
Right, but we're going to create them this year. We used released tests last year, but we're going to create harder tests this year for mock. And then we're going to administer and analyze MSTAR Universal Screener through TMSDS. That's something that the state funded. We have TMSDS. It was available this year, but we didn't use it because they were just kind of working through it, and we had enough on our plates to be guinea pigs for something. But they're ready for that this year. And that's three tests. MSTAR stands for mathematics.
Science.
No. Mathematics. What is it? Something test for algebra readiness. I can't remember what the S is suddenly. So
the bottom one is Texas Math and Science.
Yes.
Database.
Diagnostics.
Diagnostics.
I don't know. I drew a blank, but it's a fifth through eighth grade universal screener. They're going to take three times a year, and it's for algebra readiness. That's what the AR stands for. Okay. We also want to monitor engagement through classroom walkthroughs. Student engagement. When we walk in, are our students engaged? 10% engaged. 50% engaged. 80% engaged. We'll look at student engagement. What are instructional practices are being used? Are they brain friendly? Are kids really learning? Is a teacher talking all the time? Are the kids talking, you know, to each other and learning? And then what is the classroom environment like? We're also going to do progress monitoring of special populations with Kate, with PBMAS, because we are really shooting for a zero. We had a visit this year because of our LEP and our SPED populations within the Kate program, so we really want to make sure we keep an eye on Kate with Janine and Antonio, and also just in general our SPED population and the LEP population.
We're going to propose to the board to place PBMAS as a major goal, performance objective for accountability to look at this year.
And then professional development for administration. Of course, ongoing STAR and accountability. C-SCOPE, we really want to make sure that all our principals are very aware. We're going to have a leadership institute this year where they're going to spend 4 hours understanding what has come out of curriculum and instruction. And I know that sounds long, but look how fun it is. No, just kidding. But so they're going to really understand C-SCOPE and the tools that come for the administrators and what the teachers are using. They can get on any time to look. More KILGO training. Professional learning community training. We're going to do district PLCs this year. That'll come up. What are best instructional practices? How does the brain learn? Monitor instruction through classroom walkthroughs and communication training. For teachers, PLCs every 9 weeks. We're going to call in a K-12 content area and look at it vertically. We're going to teach them about STAR and accountability. We're going to teach them everything they need to know about the C-SCOPE and how to access all of their curriculum. KILGO, data, the readiness of supporting standards, how are we doing with those, our special populations, our best practices. And as far as student engagement, what are best instructional practices? Kagan, we have a Kagan Academy coming the first week of August. 3 days for math for K-5 and 2 days for science. And so we want to make sure that's implemented. Interactive notebooks, there's a need for that. You saw this. You saw those at the end of last year, how the kids are really, even because the teachers were saying, we can get all this great training, but if the kids are just losing all the stuff. So if they have it and it's there and they own it, they can go back to it and they'll learn more.
And the two words there, KILGO is about what is tested and how we do historically on those items. And teachers can look through it and discover where the strengths are, where KANU2 does well at, and where we struggle. The Kagan is about, okay, here are the items where we struggle. How do we best teach them to the students, those items? And Kagan is about those strategies to utilize in the classroom.
And really helping.
And both those address K-12, right? Or no?
Yes, they both.
Well, KILGO is about the test, so it's grades 3 through 11.
Okay. 3 through and then the end, of course, now. And then Kagan, last year, we trained all of the middle school and high school teachers. And so this summer, I'm pulling teachers in for the
elementary. And then before you go forward, say just one more time. District PLCs, vertical, is where teachers would be released with a sub going in the room, and then they would get a full day each at several points during the year to come in and see where we are, what's next, reconfigure, and go forward.
Study data from their common assessments, study the next 9 weeks of curriculum so they can be ready for that. So their PLCs can be about instruction. It can be about the how, not the what. They can study the what together and share practices. And we can even share data campus to campus with common assessments so we can learn from each other. And then, of course, differentiation. And then there's the content. So we've got strategies and structures that we want to train, but we also need to continue to teach teachers their content to help them be better teachers, especially since it's really going to, I mean, my heart really, I just admire the elementary teachers so much because they have to teach every content well. You know, as a former math teacher, I had 150 students, but I had, you know, one lesson. Whether I had 20 or 150, it had to be the best lesson. So these teachers, they may have 20 students, but they have to have the best lesson for math, reading, science, and social studies. And that's a lot of knowledge to have. So I think we need to keep training on the content areas.
And board, thank you so much, because you can see all the products in there that you've purchased for us. Successful Reader, Achieve 3000, Accelerated Math, iStation. Now all that stuff is going to go into practice. A lot of it was put in practice last year as well.
We had a lot of success with iStation, English in a Flash, and Accelerated Math in summer school, and Successful Reader. Achieve 3000, that will begin this year in the high school. And then, of course, teachers are asking for calculator training and Mimeo training, the clickers to keep students engaged in the classroom. They've received smart boards, which we need to make sure that they're proficient at using. Eduphoria, that's a learning process. And of course, C-Scope, making sure they understand all the components that are available to them in C-Scope. Yes?
Excuse me, are we gonna do away with C-Scope eventually? So I understand that teachers are writing their own curriculum?
Well, they didn't write it from scratch. They took C-Scope and made it their own. They moved things if they needed to, they added things if they needed to, vocabulary, whatever they felt, they moved it around if they didn't feel the flow worked for them. So they didn't start it from scratch.
I know, but how is this going to work with C-School? Are we going to eventually replace C-School, or do you see why are they writing their own curriculum?
Well, because it's...
I understand, but what is...
Well, let me show you what they did, and then we'll address your question. Here it is.
There.
Okay. Okay, so summer school curriculum writing. The first thing that they did is they had to identify the power standards. Let me can I give you an example? I'm going to turn on the light. And I'll give you an example in just a moment. But they had to identify their power standards. And for sure there were going to be the readiness and any supporting standards that they were not doing well on. And, you know, just basically, if they're struggling, we know that that's going to be a power standard.
And a power standard is any standard that is tested often.
Which is readiness.
That we don't do too well on. So that's that informs the teacher, okay, this is something that we have to do better at. Mm-hmm. And we've identified those K-12. Yes.
And let me give you an example. And then they had modified the year at a glance, which is their scope and sequence for the whole year. So a YAG, a year at a glance, is a C-scope product. So they were able to modify that, and they had to note it where their power standards were, so that you know when they studied it, they knew that was a power standard. Let me give you an example of what they used. If on the back of your last page.
That's the back. Look at the other side of it. Where it has a chart of data. Yes. That is an Edufolia report for third grade math. Okay, the very top column where it has like 3.318, that is 3.18. That's one of the student expectations. And then going down is how the students performed on the 2011 tax test by subpopulation.
Okay. That's Kilgo data.
This is Edufolia.
Right, but...
Okay. I'll show Kilgo in just a second. So this is an Edufolia report, and these are all the items that were tested last year in third grade and how the students did. Now, the state didn't release the test, so we can't see the questions, but we can at least read the standard. And now, if we go to the other side, this is Kilgo. She took every released item and she put it in order where teachers could study it. So this is for 3.7B, okay? Now, if you go to the other side and you find 3.37B, the top, it's about right here, 3.37B, the first number should be 60% for all students.
Okay.
I haven't done. No? Okay. Would you say that's a successful? That kind of TO is successful with that standard?
No.
Absolutely not, right? So we know that's going to be a power standard. It's also a readiness standard. Mm-hmm. So we have to be really careful because that's going to be tested a lot. So if we go then, so I've printed Kilgo for you on 3.7B. This is how 3.7B has been tested that we can see. Not every test has been released, but this is how it's been tested. Okay. And then it has the state data. Okay.
They're all the same, but they do it differently.
So, yeah.
So the key here is that if a teacher teaches it one way, mm-hmm. it's a power standard. We know it's going to be tested. If a teacher only teaches it one way, that doesn't cut it because we see it's been tested five different ways over the course of the last few years.
Yes.
And so it has to be taught multiple ways for multiple opportunities.
Right. And it looks like the first question was easier than the second, and we don't know the data from the others because they were not released years. Those are just kind of, they threw us a bone and said, we'll show you some questions of what it might have looked like. But let me show you an example, let me explain an example of rigor, because we keep hearing STAR is going to be more rigorous. Clearer, fewer, deeper. So if we look at the one where they scored 72% on, And we have actually a spreadsheet of data that shows how Common TO scored. This is the state. I didn't bring the Common TO data. But if you look at that question right there, where it said Mrs. Fields gives her students 3 stickers for every 5 check marks they get on the class homework chart. If Benito has 30 check marks, how many stickers should he have marked for answer? Okay. So they really have to look at the correspondence between the two. That's not the easiest question in the world. You know, they can look at patterns. But notice how there are no blanks on this table. Like the other tables have blanks where they just mm-hmm. kind of fill them in. The last one doesn't. But that's higher rigor because now they have to know I've got to go 25-30 and then continue the pattern on the table. It's not telling them where that answer is.
Yeah, I was having a hard time on number 3.
And this is third grade. Exactly.
This is third grade.
This is third grade.
This is hard.
So this is third grade. So these are the types of questions. This is the type of thinking that we have to ensure as we do walkthroughs that are occurring in the classroom.
What's the answer to number 3?
Let me see. These are like answer is D.
Question
Because it's 2 times 3 is 6, 3 times 3 is 9, 5 times 3 is 15, 6 times 3 is 18. They're multiples of 3.
Okay.
But see how it's different from the one before it where the pattern is going down. So we have to teach them how to think all these different ways to look at tables, how to read tables, and how to find patterns. So then it says 10 low, so this has to be a 10. They've got to write the 10 here, and then multiply it by 3. So they've got another multiplication to
do. Yeah, this is very difficult.
Then take an English language learner student.
Dude, I've been speaking all my life, and I can't
answer. I know.
Sorry, this is on me.
Okay. So anyway, so these are the challenges that the teachers have. You know, making sure that the rigor is in the classroom, and so product one was identifying the power standards from the Eduforia reports, not just the previous years, but we have Kilgo data from years back that they would study. Okay, and I just want to remind you that remember we made these to help them, because even in curriculum writing, we follow this process. We study the data, we have the learning standards, you know, we follow this process and all the study that we do in curriculum. So I just kind of wanted to bring that back. We had to identify the readiness and supporting standards, and they're probably going to do that. We did it by district at curriculum writing. They're going to have to go back and do it by campus when they return to school, and then by themselves. How did I do? Where did my students not do well, and how can I improve my instruction? That's where the PLCs come in to help, which teacher did better than I did. And so there's another Eduforia report. So that was the first day. That's what they had to do the first day. Days 2 through 7, they had to analyze their instructional focus documents, and I'll show you all these in just a moment. I'll show you what they did. They had to analyze their data. They had to make notations, additions. They couldn't delete anything from Kilgo, though, because someone already went through this study. We're just tweaking it and making it better.
And IFD's instructional focus documents are C-scope materials.
Yes, C-scope. And then you know, some things about the student performance indicator. We didn't want them to change those. And then days 8 through 10, they created common assessments. Okay, so they actually spent a little more time, which I was really thrilled about, on common assessments, because they couldn't complete all of this because not all the IFDs are up yet. The first semester is, so I'm going to have to call them back in to work on them some more during the first semester. And so they studied the unit, and they made adjustments, and then they made common assessments.
And the whole idea of a common assessment is that, like, say, at CE, at Canyon T Elementary, the entire third grade would take it. The whole district. But also, well, the individual PLC will do it as well.
Oh, yes.
But they'll write it for the entire district, and so we'll get data back across the district as to how they're doing.
And we'll study it during the district PLCs. And then day 12, they created a PowerPoint for Job Alike. It's August 16th, where all the kindergarten teachers will come to a classroom at Conotillo High School, and the kindergarten curriculum writers will go through them and show them everything that they did and how to access it and why they did what they did, the rationale. And I was very excited to get the kinder, first, and second grade teachers in this year. They were really happy. They learned a lot, and I think it's going to help us because they study the third grade readiness standards. So if this is what they're going to test in third grade, how did it map to kindergarten, and how can we prepare our kindergartners for third grade already for those readiness standards? Readiness standards are called readiness because they're college readiness standards. Okay, so let me just show you the curriculum a little bit. Let me show you what the teachers have access to. In fact, I already pulled it up, so it wouldn't take so long.
Do you have data on the teachers are doing?
I will. I'm working on that. And you're going to love it. They did the Macarena. The kindergarten, the K-3 team did the Macarena. I can't believe it. Yes. But my son and I are actually still working on creating that, because we, every curriculum writing team had a personality, so we filmed them doing something.
Okay, so this is a C-scope product,
yes,
and we're going in.
This is a C-scope website, and I'm going to go ahead and just stick with third grade since I showed you.
And as she's doing this, you know, the whole idea when I came in, there was a lot of concern about C-scope. You know, it was a cellophane wrapped product that was just thrown to the teachers.
I need a net.
What?
Okay. I need a net.
Oh, and then the whole thing was that we did the curriculum writing so that they could make it their own, so that they could find the stuff in C-Scope that they really liked and get rid of the stuff in C-Scope that they didn't like. And now we've done it 2 years in a row, and I really feel that the teachers really have come to appreciate C-Scope and the process that we have. And so when people say, well, is C-Scope your curriculum? I say no. The curriculum is the CISD standards-based curriculum that uses C-Scope as a component of it. But they also have written their own lessons. They've used supplemental materials that aren't even mentioned in C-Scope. And now it's an integral part of it. So, Letty, to go to your question, I see us continuing to purchase C-Scope and to use it. But again, it is not the end all of what we do for it. And just to let you know, Socorro now
is... Well, the standards part is. The lessons aren't. Right. But the work that they did this summer.
C-Scope also has been... C-Scope has also been purchased by Socorro. Now Socorro is using it as well.
I heard that the state is going to do away with the textbooks.
What the state did in Senate Bill 6 is they stopped requiring that the textbook money be utilized just to purchase textbooks. We can now, a district now can elect to, instead of purchasing just textbooks, they can take the allotted money and buy some textbooks, some technology, some tablet computers or laptops. They can do whatever they want with the money. We had a presentation about that yesterday or 2 days ago in leadership about it. Right now, we're not purchasing a bunch of laptops. We're continuing on, but sometime this year, we're gonna have to have a discussion for next year as to how we wanna utilize those funds.
Okay, so there it is. There's the filter that we were talking about anyway. Okay.
That was part of the to see how bad it was. I
just knew you guys would be doing it, so I just.
Okay.
Where's your answer, Lori?
Thank you. So here's third grade math, for example. Now, let me just give you a little quick mini lesson. If it has an apple by it, it means it was C-Scope. If the apple's gone, but it's just a chalkboard, it's CISD. Now, after we finish completely and everything's been done, I can turn that off where they can't access that one, where they can only access the CISD one. And that's what we want, because we don't want different things happening at different campuses, because we want everyone on the same
page. So this is the stuff that the curriculum writers wrote?
Yes. I'll show you. So to make it easy, they put everything under attachment. So this is the only place a teacher teaching Unit 1 needs to get the PLC. So they can hook up their computer, put it up on here, and all the stuff they need is here. There you add.
Year at a glance.
This is their year at a glance. That they
order get. Of units.
Right. And their identification of readiness standards, supporting standards. And this is red because this went away. This used to be called Objective 6 Problem Solving. It went away. They're not called objectives anymore. They're called reporting categories. But they're embedding them in all the questions. So if you look at our Objective 6 data, it's lower because they're wordy word problems. And so it's more difficult for the students. So they're just bumping the rigor by making problems more like that. 75% of the math test is going to be questions like those.
So who updates this?
The curriculum writers did this.
That's for the teachers.
This is teacher because the readiness and supporting standards just came out in the assessed curriculum. So they studied them, they identified them. So now the PLC, okay, we know that this is heavily tested. We look at the data, and these are the power standards that are either readiness, supporting, or we struggle on. Like this one right here. 3.4A, they were scoring in the 70s. So anything below 80, they were saying we need to do better on. So that's how they identified, that's their year at a glance, how they studied the data, studied their readiness standards, and identified their power standards. Okay, so there they are. They don't have to do that now. So the PLC can be, when we look at now the instructional focus document, okay, so now what are we gonna teach? What do we have to make sure? They studied the Kilbo and made sure that everything was here that needed to be taught. Okay, performance indicators. This is something other than multiple choice that they can do. And of course, then they highlighted their power standards again. The power standards are highlighted, so now they can study. Okay, just real quick. When we teach place value, we have to make sure we include number systems, and it just allows them to say, this is what I have to include in my lesson to make sure that students are successful. And then they can start sharing, oh, okay, and this is how I teach it, and they can look at their data on their common assessments. Okay, so anyway, that's the instructional focus document that they study. And then they created a common assessment. Now, this is district available. This is for every, after this instructional focus document, this is a common assessment. They have you two. One of them is the assessment itself, one of them is the key, and it's already in Eduphoria. So they go to Eduphoria, they find the test, they print out the answer documents already done, they give the students the test, scan them in, the data's there, and we can compare it teacher to teacher, campus to campus. Now, third grade this year, they used to be able to just circle their, bubble their answer in their booklet. They now have to use an answer document. So they're going to need a lot of practice using that answer document with Eduphoria and taking this test separate from. It's going to take them all year because they're just, they come into us as second graders.
I know.
So they really, so for every unit, we have common assessments that is now available to the district. But they really paid attention to the rigor. They studied those more difficult questions. Their readiness standards are in there, along with the supporting. But teachers now have these tools at their fingertips. So that's how we're preparing for the STAR. Even though we may not know, we're going to have this data to analyze. We're going to study it and see which questions are they getting right, which questions are they missing, how is it being asked, where are they struggling. And those were the... I have to thank Annette and her department. They have been
amazing.
They've
30 been minutes ago.
If I go, let's see, I'll go to seventh grade.
Literally 30 minutes ago.
Let me just show you one more.
Really? Because they're faster.
Triple.
Then who was speaking?
AT&T.
Okay. Yeah, I did share.
Do you want to see a little bit more?
Well, when she got this, she's just put so much with the when you go into the common assessments, and Pam came up with this really cool spreadsheet which showed the tested curriculum and you know how much they were putting in the sheet and color coded it. I mean, I was so impressed. But then they took that and that's what they came up with. This is
so here's 7th grade, flow of energy assessment. It's their common assessment. Let's see, look at what they did. Are they amazing or what?
Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So,
that is wonderful.
And our teachers did that.
Teachers did this.
Isn't that good?
This
summer.
Yes.
See, C-Scope doesn't have it like this to where, you know, if we follow C-Scope, we have to follow everything with C-Scope. But here we can ensure that we study our own data, we know what we need.
They have the things that they can refer to as absence.
Yes. May have a lesson in here.
Pam, when you as you visited and worked with the summer curriculum writers, what was their mood? What was their feeling about doing all this?
Well, I have a video that's going to show you all of that. But it was great. Annette did a visit. Why don't you share with Annette?
Yeah, they were, I don't want to use the word bored, but some of them were because they felt empowered. Okay, but they were, the math, they were just, I mean, they were eating at the table. I went into the library a couple times, and they were eating at the table. I said, "Did you get a lunch?" She goes, "Oh no, we gotta get this done." And so
And they were people from all over the district. So it wasn't just, and I happened to be going in with the middle school. So you had the two middle schools working there. And I was really impressed. I went back and I told Pam, I was really impressed. Then the social studies. I mean, if you get anybody degree, social study teaching, that's just really weird. But they were all there and they were working so hard. Mr. Hayes, they were all sitting there, going, and they were creating this stuff, and I was just, I was.
And we had what, about 130 teachers?
It was actually 94.
94?
I cut the teams down a little bit, made them more focused. I selected the curriculum writers by, first of all, teacher principal recommendation, and if they wanted to. And then I looked at data. I looked at their previous tax data, so we really did have quite the cream of the crop. Not all of the cream of the crop, but here's the, what she was talking about. Here are all the tested teachers.
I'm very impressed with that.
If they're green, their readiness, if they're yellow, they're supporting, and here's when they're going to teach it. This is first 6 weeks, first week, first 6 weeks, second week. I just wanted them to have a visual to make sure that they knew that they were covering them enough, that they were really addressing them. And this is the first year that Algebra 1 gets to teach Algebra 1. Notice there are no eighth grade teaks here anymore.
Okay, Pam, what's...
And then they did their first week, that first 6 weeks exam form A. They even created two forms.
For cheating.
Yeah, in Algebra 1 classroom. So they're not going to let them get away with anything, which is great. So here's Algebra 1's common assessment. That Niches will also, I'm sorry, Northwest will also share. There's tables, graphs, lots of visuals to try to get them ready for the start. So anyway, that is what the curriculum writers did this summer.
Excellent. Were they paid to do that?
I'm sorry, yes. They were paid $35 an hour to do that.
We used, in fact, just seeing your notes, the large majority of the money, both for last year and this year, was out of the ARRA stimulus money, the Obama money.
Good.
We spent probably over the last two summers $700,000.
Some was ARRA and a little bit was Title I.
Yeah.
We used mostly that.
All right, let's go to the...
I'm sorry? Oh, yeah. That is a mountain. It's a pretty mountain.
The organizational. Tony, do you need to read the next? It's a chart.
Yeah, I just have it. It's the first page there. I thought enough of PowerPoint. We'd just sit down and talk about it.
Update on staffing within the Curriculum and Instruction Division.
Oh, yes. Well, here's Curriculum Instruction as it stands right now. I mean, I consider special ed and ALS part of the Curriculum Instruction Department because, I mean, they're all the same students, and there are students that have special needs that we really have to pay attention to in the classroom and as we write curriculum and by programs and products. So what we have, of course, me and then Rosalinda, who is my angel. I really should have been calling myself a Wolfpacker 1. She was like...
The reds are the clerks,
yes,
and the secretary, the administrative assistant.
And so, and then, of course, there's Janine and Antonio with their administrative assistants. And then Janine now has Sandy as her special ed counselor and Adriana as the lead teacher. And so now there's another lead teacher, which is a vacancy. Not really any new positions. Everything just kind of restructured. And, of course, Consuelo is there as her PIMS clerk. And then we have the migrant lead teacher, Margarita Harmison, and right now the Title III lead teacher. Of course, nothing's been done officially through HR yet, but I understand the discussion was had with you all about moving Magdalena to focus on K-2, which is a very high need. That is her strength. And because of the way Title III is funded, and there's been some new language in Title III about only a certain amount of Title III can be paid during doing certain functions. So the lead teacher really has to spend more time on the campuses. So the Title III lead teacher, looking at the data that we have for our ELL population,
we really need to focus on high school math and science, especially with end of course coming. So we need someone that has the high school ELL strategies that they can help math and science teachers have in their have better instruction in their classroom for those students, because we are moving that area.
So how is the, okay, so you moved Magdalena over to the early childhood, which is our strength.
And I still have to work on the job description.
Right, but the one of the main reasons you haven't moved her is she's not working under the funding correctly.
Yes, yes.
And then how are you going to restructure the Title III lead teacher vacancy to where it does work under the funding correctly?
Because this person will be on the campus most of the time, working with teachers, which is what the funding is. The expectation of funding for that position.
I have a question.
Yes.
Dr. Murphy, so you're saying that because of funding, you want to move to curriculum, but then you want to create another position for the campus?
Well, the money remains. The position or the money remains in ALS.
It would be just replacing Mandela and getting someone else that can do high school math and science and help teach other people.
Then as I said in executive session last week, Magdalena would be a PEZ purchase to curriculum, like, as I explained. And I said, you know, all those moves that I brought up, all of them were easy, except this one, because this one actually cost us a PEZ unit. And the board said I could go ahead and do that.
And we really haven't had K-2 support, and the principals, the elementary principals are asking, do we need guided reading, we need training, and she's strong with reading workshop and writing workshop.
So she's not
early
she's
childhood.
Secondary,
she's certified early childhood.
Early childhood. Okay.
So where our needs are with the Title III, with the LEP, is mostly in the high school. And you'll see that in Kate, you'll see that with just math in general. And reading, of course. But we really want to focus that more on math and science.
And this other special ed teacher, when did that come about? Because I know we only had one.
There was one. Remember Sandy was the lead teacher for autism, the instructional specialist for autism. She got promoted to counselor.
Which was a current position.
Right.
Yeah, that was.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, and then there was already Adriana, the special ed lead teacher. And so the instructional specialist for autism, Sandy now has a $3,000 stipend to also take on that responsibility. So that, she just kind of restructured that position to make two lead teachers.
With the previous... When the previous counselor was there, she was handling the autism.
Yes.
She was. So when she went back to the regular campus, that position was
vacant. No. Sandy was that position. Sandy got promoted to counselor.
But before that, because the counselor before that handled the autism.
Julia.
She did.
Oh, I don't. I guess that was before
me. Yeah, that was
okay.
She did.
Okay.
So did. That's my understanding was Carrie went back. Flores,
yes,
she the went. Lead teacher went
yes.
back.
Yes, yes, yes.
Sandy
yes.
became the lead teacher and then picked up the autism. Up when Julia left. That was my
okay.
understanding that this other lead teacher did not exist. That, unless
it
I'm
is,
wrong.
It is. It's a newly created position. Mm-hmm.
That's how I remember it.
It is.
So Sandy was the instructional.
She was the lead teacher, but she
for
picked
autism.
Up the autism. No, she became the lead teacher because Carrie asked to go back to the campus. So she became the lead teacher, and because she had the autism background, my understanding was Janine was asking her to take it over because Julia went back to the campus as a counselor.
Okay.
That was my
then
understanding.
Then all of the clarification, I did talk to her earlier today because I had the same question, and mm-hmm. she said that she had the special ed lead teacher before, and but I haven't been here long enough to...
Sandy Potts was at the personal committee last week, and I know that they are restructuring with some positions that they're not replacing and they combine. And so let me go back and research the personal committee meeting,
okay.
And then we'll clarify all of that to
okay.
see where.
And where? How come you left John off here? See how you are?
John reports to me.
Okay, he's going over here. I thought he was yours. Okay. So he's over here.
I'll take him. You know, he's great. No, we work so closely.
I thought he was yours. So he belongs to Sue. Okay.
Yeah, he does.
And then, and the main reason he works for me is because then he can work with everybody.
I didn't know that. I thought I even thought you brought him, like, or not brought him, you know what I mean?
I recruited him.
Yeah.
I did.
Okay.
So that's the special ed department. And then there's Antonio. That's what it would look like now. If with Magdalena moving over and focusing on the K2, which really is a dire need. And the K2 has been neglected, I think, at least the last year.
I do agree with you there. I think the elementary in whole has been, elementaries right. have been shifted by the wayside. I think there hasn't been enough support for them, in my opinion.
PK2 is so important. And I know that she would work very closely with Margarita Amigadis to work with those pre-K students in kindergarten and getting those parents involved, making sure those
and
students
we're not changing the structure of pre-K, right? It's staying the same half day. We're not changing anything. Right. Nothing's happening there. Okay.
Then down below you have green and blue. What are the green?
Okay, so the green, that would be new, having the early childhood, and then we've hired Nellie, who's wonderful, and Judy has been the blue is who's there now. Judy has been just a great asset. Really, we use so much of Title II in CNI, it just makes so much sense that she's there in CNI because we're constantly talking about professional development, and Title II is for professional development for teachers and principals. And then what I'm asking for, or what I'd asked for, was two curriculum coordinators because of STAR and of course. And you know, I just came back this weekend to get more TA updates, which is why I was able to share some the most updated information, but I can't go to every. Because math has its own deal, science has its own deal. TA has whole departments that for each of those tested areas. So for me to just stay on top of everything, and it would really be very difficult. I would hardly ever be here. And so having an ideal world, I'd have a math and a science, but you know, I'm willing to work with, I'd be so happy with just the math and science. And that way they could also, look for the best staff developers, the training to come in to really help them with the edu-forages at the PLCs, focus on the math and science. We have the experts there. And then another social studies and advanced academics curriculum coordinator, which kind of would help out with what Denise did with advanced academics and GT, but also social studies. Social studies is tested only in eighth grade and then the three end of course exams. So they could really manage another program and still, I think, get out to campuses. But really, having Nellie also working with the 504, but with ELAR, and supporting the special population, supporting Janine and Antonio and those visits out there, and making sure that the special ed programs are really addressing the content to the rigor. Because they're going to have STAR-M. They're no longer having STAR, but they're going to have STAR-M. It's still to the level. They're just going to simplify those questions. Maybe, you know, give a little more hints and leave it blank instead of making them, you know, but it's still the rigor of those questions. So we need content specialists to support the special ed department and the ELL learners. And they can just visit PLCs.
Nellie's picking up, like, the 504 stuff and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
And then just to be clear, the greens are the new units. You approved the math, science, and the social studies in the compensation approval, the budget approval. And then the green on the left, Magdalena, was what I brought to you last time as a PEDS.
So how many PEDS do we have left?
What are we down to, 9?
You went 10, and this is the only one, right?
No.
Magdalena, so 2.
We've used 3.
So 7?
We've used 3.
Mm-hmm. Are we counting the...
Yes.
So we just count the PEDS, we're not counting the safety.
We've got 3 and
okay.
And so this one here, the early childhood, we're working on getting the job description and making those changes. So officially it has not taken place yet.
Dr. Murphy, can you send us a list of tests that we have used?
Well, there's 3 there. I can. It's the French teacher when we moved Zimmerman out.
but she's still on the payroll, but we're not having her at the high school. It's this, Magdalena, and the third one is?
Special Ed Aid at BC.
Special Ed Aid at BC.
And aid would be a whole
bit. I didn't know they would count as a whole bit.
Because of the salary, I believe, right?
Yeah, but an aid's not a...
Then we should be 2-1.
Well, we'll see at the end how we end up. Last year, guys, we only wound up in the whole year, wound up using 5.
It's a little rectangular candy.
Yeah.
Well, there's extras, and I can get math, science, healing.
So we still have 7 left. So we're looking really good.
We'll send you a list next week of the ones that we keep.
We still have 8 left?
7.5.
7.5.
Why is it 7.5?
Because one's an aid, but we'll check to see how that goes.
I think we should be able to get 2 for 1. Because it's 55,000.
Yeah. And so, Pam, do you feel confident that you have the staff?
Ideally, I would have a math, because that's going to be a lot, even that. But I feel strong in math. I really kind of need someone strong in science that I can support. But I will be very happy with this take us, I think, to begin the next level. If we feel maybe next year if we need but I'll be very grateful.
And you think this will begin to prepare the road for the new exams?
Yes. Unless you're really willing to give me a math and a science and
no, I think the social studies gets tested too. So.
Yes, 8th grade.
I just think because math and science is big and
huge, and
we lack there. I don't know.
Well, I'd be more than happy to have another PES.
That's what we're hurting. That's what I'm saying. That's our weak areas.
The only thing is, I absolutely agree with you all, but we do have with the personnel committee, we're looking at the numbers that we might be using. I mean, at least like 2 PES minimum. Teachers.
And I was going to ask you that. What about the 10 that we have set aside with the budget? These are the ones.
Those are the pets.
And
we
used
3.
Originally, we only had 7.
Even if I had, if we had just one more for math, science.
Hold on. I'm sorry.
What about the right now the college? I know you said the high school allotment, but.
That's not a PES. He paid for that out of his own money.
He has the budget.
But that's college ready. That's okay. Mm-hmm. We had 10 to begin with. And 2.5 are down.
2.5 are down.
And we're going to be looking at, and I'm looking at enrollment figures twice a week.
So. And last year, in the entire set, we only used 5. So we're solid right now. We'll just have to see.
And how about teachers? Did we put money set aside to hire teachers?
That's within
that. No, separate on the budget.
We set up these 10 units. And one French teacher, that is 1. This is 2, and then we have a half 8. The majority of them will be teachers as August and September come and we need enrollment relief. The rest of them, or the large majority of them, will be teachers as they're needed. But again, we went through a very careful staffing in January and February with Dr. Wachtel. You guys allowed us to hire him, and we think we've staffed pretty good. And so I don't know that we'll need a whole bunch more teachers. We've looked at it very carefully.
I don't know.
What Dr. Murphy says, we definitely fine-tune elementary. What we were focusing on this year is fine-tuning middle school. And now, we have seen some trends. I'm seeing some trends, which we've already, the personnel committee is looking at. That, so we're absolutely looking at that. We're going to use PES units. You need to know that. We are absolutely
there's
using
one, right? CNI, there's one for CNI, right?
Well, and I want to trust and I want to rely on the personnel committee. I don't want someone to just say, like, here, I want this one in. Here, you sign here.
We're being frugal.
And I want that. Mm-hmm. I want that. I want you guys to be frugal, and I want that.
And we have been, we have looked, and it's not many, but we've had the support of the personnel committee, the support of the administration, of course, which I'm part, but looking at and getting with the principals and saying to the principals that wanted those additional units, that we've had to sit in the personnel committee and say, okay, elementary principal, I have this teacher that we need to move. And they looked at us and they'd say, now, of course, they wanted to go higher, and they said, you have a tax credit. I said, yes, we do. What else do you want? You know, and then they'd say, okay, we'll take them. So
the first thing that we look for is when we need a teacher here, we look and see if we have any soft areas across the system where we could move someone without using a PES.
Right.
Save us that money and move someone if they have excess. And we've done that, oh goodness,
awesome,
multiple times all summer long, which we're really, I think we're going to be tighter than we've ever been. And by tight, I mean good. I mean really solid. But you never know when that first day of school comes. Another control that we have is we have it in regulation that the personnel committee will not give a PES once the school year starts until after Labor Day, unless it's an emergency situation. We make those classes sit, even if they're a little high, until Labor Day, because who knows what happens after the first couple, 3 weeks.
Okay.
And then would they?
And then in October,
can we wait till the next personnel meeting and see what?
In other words, in terms of your planning, if come, I don't know, September, we say, okay, we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Are you going to be okay if we say, okay, we'll allot you somebody so you can split math, have one person for math and one for science?
Yeah, like we have a PES left.
Or is that going to throw off the
budget?
The planning.
Oh, no. That would be wonderful. Yeah, but that would just... The only thing it would impact is how I write this job description. I would just put science, one science and one math.
Well, if you did this one now, you could come back and rewrite
it. Well, you can rewrite it. I think revise the job description. Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's not going to change your cake.
Well, it's not going to change.
Okay, we can do that.
I think this is probably one of the most important ones
we
need to take a look at using a PES for, because the last 10 years, everything that's kept us from it is math and science.
And we're
really
showing gains, and we're on the right track. And I think if we get that bump, especially to start coming.
So I think that's probably where we need to focus our efforts right now, if we have some extra.
So does this committee then make a recommendation to the board?
Well, that's what we're thinking right now, that maybe she brings it back in September, post as is, and in September with the enrollment.
If the board's desire is to lean toward letting her get a second, that's going to inform her on how she picks the
people.
Yeah. Because now she can go hardcore for a math person, whereas if she only had one, she'd really have to be looking for that science.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of needs to know if that's...
Yeah, but it's going to have to... She has to focus anyway on that person anyway.
Right, but does she need to get somebody who's good in both, or can she get a star in just
she
one?
She can focus on one that can... They can do both, because it's to her advantage.
Right.
And my intent was to kind of focus on someone's science, since I'm math.
Right. Yes.
Oh, well, that's
what
I'm saying.
That was your intent.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You see, you need to your advantage to.
Right. That's what you can say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And come September,
get a math.
Then I get a math.
You can get a mini me.
That's funny.
The personnel be more frugal.
Actually, the principals are even working with us in the sense that we start talking certifications, and then maybe within the campus they can rearrange their folks so that we can plot somebody that we have already and accommodate them in the grade level that they belong.
The principals have done that. We've had a principal that came and said, I need a fourth grade teacher. And I said, no, you need a teacher. I said, but you could move one of your fourth grades because it's EC through four. Mm-hmm. If they need a third grade, you could move one of them down to third, and then I could give you a fourth through eighth that we have. And they went, oh. Mm-hmm. And we've done that on quite a few occasions, and I have to say the principals have been great.
We have enough for at least six teachers. And then if that's all we need, then we can get you your your math person.
But we're looking very closely at CE. We've already approved one for CE that we just did. We're looking very closely at Jose Damian, because she's got a couple that are sitting. You know, I mean, we're definitely going to wait until the enrollment comes in.
But yeah, they called to ask if 24-1 was the
cap.
The cap, or was it the standard? I think it's the cap. And that's with a waiver. So,
yeah.
She's
so
got,
I know
she's might change.
She's got a grade level that's got 24-24-24-24. So we're
going to
watch.
Now,
I mean, but we're.
Bet you got a plan here.
We have to use them. We have to use them. Remember, guys.
Oh,
we also have that $100,000
yes.
cushion.
You know, Letty, I'm thinking that if she posts for a math science curriculum coordinator now, and we get somebody, and then but we don't post for a
did
math
you
one and a science.
Do you feel strong about it now?
I do.
Okay,
I think,
then let's go for it.
I think we should do it now, and I'll tell you why.
Do you want to do it now?
I'm afraid that we might miss the good bucket full of people if we wait and maybe get some leftovers. That's my concern. I don't want to get leftovers. I want to get top of the line.
Is there going to be leftovers?
No leftover misses.
No.
I think we should.
What's the salary?
Dr. Murphy's coming up.
What do you write on
the salary is.
What's the salary on the PES? On your coordinates?
Well, I know it varies according to what they're making when they come in, but there is.
60.
It's about
960.
I'm sorry?
59.60.
So it's a little over a PES.
But we only used the PES for an aid, so we got that other half.
Yeah,
so
you had that half.
So that's
but with that can vary. Like if someone is making 59 right now, that we could maybe offer. I don't know, can anybody vary that a little bit? Because the board approved like 75, right? And she said keep it below, and I said I could do that.
But, this is what we're sorting.
But I know it's
yes.
We can't guess it right.
That's why I asked, because it's math and science together. I think it's kind of. I mean, and I know you're.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot to.
The other areas.
Depend on one person, like you're going to get it right every time, and you're going to cover everything.
I agree with the other areas where you put the social studies, advanced academics in. We're doing fine with that.
And this one,
yes,
she
ELA with 504.
ELA
with
504.
I'm sorry, what?
She
can't
be
mentioned
by
anybody.
But math and science.
I'd really like people with curriculum instruction, so I make the standards that they're getting the support they need with curriculum and training.
We would have six PES left, because this would be take like a little over one. Yeah. I'm okay with it.
Well, we'll bring it to the August board meeting, because there's no action for it here.
Yeah.
No,
it's just information.
But we've talked about it instead of at the August board meeting doing all this again.
Exactly.
If we bring a recommendation
someone
from the committee, it expedites
they don't want it.
Okay.
Well, I hadn't been really going. I was kind of relying on
that.
I'm going to have to pull that way.
These people, they're going to be in charge of like disseminating information to the instructional coordinators? I mean, or how do you foresee them,
Leading PLCs, visiting campuses, making sure, modeling lessons in classroom, teaching them the content that, you know, because again, especially those elementary teachers who have so much responsibility, getting that support to them, finding the great trainers, working with UTEP to bring in science mm-hmm. there, science people from UTEP to come in and staff their corporate teachers. Just know it, because they know the science people. They can go to the TA updates for science, the C-scope for science, they can.
And how do you
classroom walkthroughs?
The teachers.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you envision
make sure
the,
they have all the science
the bilingual and the English? Like, is somebody going to be able to handle both spectrums or not?
Well, yes. I mean, even if they don't speak science, it's the processes that are there, making mm-hmm. sure they have the resources and materials, the training, you know, everything. It's
materials. That's my
resources
biggest
and materials. that's to the rigor in Spanish as well, because actually the Spanish tests are harder.
Yeah, I know.
Leg cells are higher. They're harder tests, which is why we want to push toward English sooner.
Well,
it was the discussion on the weekend.
Yeah.
But do we make a recommendation as the committee?
We didn't put it on that. This is what they must. It's just.
But as a board.
Tell me how this works.
It's in the chart that they're making.
But
they put it again. It could just be in the minutes, Ms. Searle. Yes. Recommends that there's a recommendation.
Yeah. Okay. And then you can
make a recommendation. The committee, recommends that a science and a math be separated and brought to the August board meeting for a full board discussion.
Okay, thank you.
I was not expecting that at all.
Chris was feeling awful jealous tonight.
But think about it. It's good that we raised the number
she's
of
my
heads.
Yeah.
Now we have the.
Oh, she does. Yeah. She's my board buddy. I'm saying that's great. I got her back.
That's
so
favoritism.
Much.
Yeah. So what we really need to focus on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And within the job description, maybe it'd be pretty specific too that, you know, you're going to have to make your job count.
Oh,
you know, we were
okay.
We were lenient.
Follow regulation and then follow procedures. So.
Okay.
Thank
good
you.
Good job, Pam. Yay!
Ms. Carrasco, follow regulations and follow procedures.
And a long stay.
I'm sorry. What?
I'm very frugal.
I'm happily not sick. I shouldn't have with Rosalinda.
Yeah,
yes,
that's
it.
That's what you're doing. Scoop? No, that's not to do that. I forget.
It was seriously? Alan. It was Alan.
Alan.
Somebody put this face down in there. I hope it recorded. That would be community input, comments, input from the community members on items discussed by the Instruction Personnel Policy Student Services Committee.
Community, any community?
They need to come one at a time and not as such a mall.
Adjournment.
I'm unanimous.
Thank you, Letty. That was a real nice.
7:58.
Yeah, look, check that, girl.
Because Mr. Rodriguez isn't here.
Yes.